and welcome to another edition of the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGalliard. I have alongside with me my good friend, my co-host, Parker Fleming. Parker, we are here officially now to talk about a top 10 TCU Horned Frog team.
Does stand for top 10. Christian University. Wait, that doesn't work. We need Texas in there. Okay, that one is completely out of it. But yes, TCU 6-0 beat Oklahoma State in overtime, came back from a 14-point deficit. Pretty crazy. Grant, also shout out to the AP voters. Oklahoma State only dropped to 11th, and TCU is up to 8th, I think, now. So pretty dang impressive, pretty fun overall weekend. We've said it before, we'll say it again. It's nice to have good stress with the TCU football team, and we had some good stress.
Much like the TCU Oklahoma State game, this podcast got off to a very rocky start with that intro. But I tweeted this, and I told you Tuesday, like I started watching the game when it was 14-0. I came off the golf course, and immediately you got the sense that probably just the first schemed drive from Oklahoma State kind of set the tone, plus the TCU error on the punt return, right? You can walk me through kind of the first couple, couple.
Yeah, drives. So basically TCU went effectively 2 3-and-outs. They got 2 first downs on the second one, and then went 3-and-out again on the first drives. A total of 34 yards on those 2 drives. Contrary to that, Oklahoma State went 73 and 78 yards for touchdowns on sustained drives. Had big chunk plays. A 38-yard play on the first drive and a 29-yard run. And then on the second one, a 14-yard play, a 23-yard run, and then a 12-yard touchdown. So some chunk plays there as well. Spencer Sanders' legs looked especially dangerous early in the game, Grant. They really did.
Yeah. I think the TV was on at the tournament, and the first thing I saw was Spencer Sanders running for a touchdown on the kind of keeper near the goal line. And that really worried me because we had talked about, okay, how is TCU going to spy Spencer Sanders? There are so many things about this game we could talk about. I don't want to immediately lead with Johnny Hodges appears to be very slow, but Johnny Hodges appears to be very slow. And I don't know if putting him on Sanders was the right answer early. All that to be said, I think we should lead with, if you don't mind, Parker, before we get to your higher order stats, the TCU defense won this game.
Absolutely. Joe Gillespie.
Their neck.
Pantsed Casey Dunn. Absolutely pantsed Casey Dunn. Oklahoma State on its first 2 possessions, Grant, had 151 total yards. That's 75.5 yards per possession. On their final 13 possessions, so I threw out the end of half and end of game kneel downs, gave them back a yard for each of those because they lost a yard on the kneel down. Oklahoma State on those final 13 possessions, 236 yards, 18.2 yards per possession, Grant. They didn't score except on short fields after those first 2 drives. Amazing adjustment there. And when you look at the fact that Johnny Hodges was definitely probably playing hurt. Move that around.
Yeah, I should no, have bagged on him. He was
he played poorly, hurt. But he's one of those kids that's like, hey, I'm just going to go until I break. And he realizes that literally it's a scarecrow. It's a scarecrow operated by puppet strings behind him if he is not out there.
Correct.
So definitely had to had to persevere and looked like he was playing through some pain, but they really did well after those first 2 drives.
In the second quarter, this is Oklahoma State's drive results. Field goal, punt, interception, punt, punt, end of game. I mean, the defense did exactly what it needed to do to allow the offense to kind of get going and find its feet. Luckily, TCU now has an offense that can do that, can make those in-game adjustments, and has the skill talent to capitalize on them. Parker, I'll be honest with you. You were way more optimistic than I was in this game, even though you declared it over prematurely, which I'll let you slide on. But
the reverse jinx works, okay? The reverse jinx works. It's so weird. At halftime, I was like, guys, am I taking crazy pills? Why do I feel optimistic about this game? But the reality was, Oklahoma State had 2 good drives, and then 2 special teams nonsense things set them up for 10 points. And the difference was Oklahoma State had an extra possession and 2 short field scores, and they were only up 14. That to me was just absurd. And then they scored at the beginning as the TCU brought it back to 11. They kicked a field goal at the half, and it's like they're up 2 possessions, and they're still only up 14. And TCU really was locking in. I really was worried that it was going to be timing, just the way TCU's moving the ball. But it felt like the desperation, you know, creativity comes out of desperation sometimes. And it really looked like Sonny Dykes and Garrett Riley were cooking on the sidelines. I mean, there were some cutaways on that broadcast where it was like, you were both a couple of sons of guns. Like, I'm an earmuffs kids. The shit-eating grin that Sonny Dykes had after a couple of touchdowns, they saw something that they very much liked with the Oklahoma State defense and were like, yeah, we're coming for that.
I mean, the touchdown to Wiley at the end was, if it hadn't have worked, I would have been very angry, but boy, did it work. And it was truly something.
And it wasn't like a great throw. I mean, he's 6'7", just get the ball in his area code.
I was talking about this with a friend of mine earlier today. Max was playing hurt, you could tell. His shoulder was bothering him. Some of those throws are kind of wounded ducks. But they schemed guys open enough to where it was like, dude, just get him the ball.
Right. They weren't asking him to make a precision throw. They were like, just get it out before you could hit. And he literally did. And Wiley was open. Also, if you look, Richard Johnson on Twitter, our friend, he was at the game this weekend for SI. And he had an on-field video that was great because it showed the touchdown where Quentin Johnston was wide open and Oklahoma State just missed him. On the other side, Jared Wiley was wide ass open too. Like, yes, if they had covered QJ, that was a touchdown anyway. That was an amazing, amazing way to kind of exploit the coverages that Oklahoma State was running. I was just so pleased with TCU's adaptation. As frustrated as I was with the first couple of drives, and then they felt like they couldn't get Max going. Grant, last year, what happens is they run the ball 50 times in the second half, and we don't get this kind of rebound. This year, adjustments, moving around, getting the ball to your best player, trusting your guys, letting it work out, scheming up opportunities. It was amazing. I was so proud of it, and just extremely happy to see that TCU's offense didn't turtle up and lose a game that I think in the past they would have lost.
Yeah, this is not a game TCU could have won last year. And I think we've said that in a couple of games. I think we said it about Kansas as well, but this is a new look. And I can't get enough of it. Parker, we have somehow made it about 6 minutes and 45 seconds into this podcast without talking about higher order stats. So please give me the rundown. What does it look like? Should TCU have won this game or not?
Yeah, I think they absolutely should have. And when you account for the short field, that really was where these EPA stats get really, really blown out. Because again, if you get the ball first and 10 on your opponent's 30, expected points is pretty high there. And so if you score, it's not like that really driven, you know, it accounts for that well. So Oklahoma State 0.04 EPA per play, TCU 0.25, TCU 49% success rate, Oklahoma State 43% success rate. TCU outgained Oklahoma State by more than a full yard, highlighted especially by 0.31 EPA per rush. So a really great performance there from Kendre Miller. We'll talk about him specifically. On offense specifically, looking at EPA, TCU 20.9 offensive EPA, Oklahoma State 3.21. Really huge, huge difference there in terms of just lining up and moving the ball. TCU had some sequencing issues early. They went for it on fourth down and didn't get any points out of there when they were down 24-7. And so that kind of widens the disparity between, or the perception between, efficiency and reality there. Overall really good. The last thing to point out is that TCU ended the game 3-for-13 on third downs, Oklahoma State 6-for-17. So TCU's problem wasn't necessarily third down efficiency. I think the average distance in the third quarter, the average distance was like 8.2 yards. I went and looked it up. And so the issue was early down success. But when TCU got that rolling, the third downs became immaterial. Oklahoma State, on the other hand, was living and breathing on third downs for this game. Even on turnovers, basically even on penalties, this game was, you know, except for one or two special teams things, was really decided on the merits of down-to-down efficiency. And as variance decreased over the game, Grant, the better team, I believe, won.
Can I say something that maybe you disagree with? I thought this was a really well-played game. I thought that the mistakes that offenses made were caused by the defense quite often. I think this was a game between two very good teams that deserved to be in the top 15. Like you said, voters didn't drop Oklahoma State, which I think was an astute decision. I really enjoyed watching this game. These are two teams that can beat damn near anybody. And just very evenly matched, just a hell of a contest. I want to, like you said, give a shout out to Kendre Miller. 104 yards on 22 carries, 4.7 yards per rush, two TDs. Parker, he averaged 3.41 yards after contact. And listen, Amari DiMarcado averaged 6 yards a rush, had 4.67 yards after contact. Great game on the ground.
On a long of 16. So yeah. DiMarcado is one of those sneaky guys who will bust off like a 40-yard run, and then that'll be his, you know, yards for contact, whatever. Not today. No long run for him. Only 3 runs of 10-plus yards, but an absolutely just a monstrous yards after contact from him. Very physical back. Very pleased with that. He had 4 first downs. Duggan had 5 on the ground. Kendre Miller had 9 on the ground.
And now it's time to talk about Quentin Johnston. Parker, I contend this was a better performance than last week against Kansas. Because last week against Kansas, the motto was feed QJ the ball at all costs. Against Oklahoma State, it was, hey, if QJ's open, throw it to him. And even if he's not, maybe chunk it. Parker, he caught 8 passes on 14 targets. Now, that's a little low, but some of those throws were cut off the mark, if we're being honest. No drops, according to PFF. 22.5 yards per catch and a touchdown. That was unguardable again.
Not bad at all. 4.39 yards per route run. So I'll read this stat just because I've been keeping track of it. We've been saying we need to get Quentin Johnston more involved, right? And volume is a function of opportunity and a function of results, right? And so this yards per route run stat says, how many opportunities did you have? How many routes did you run? And how productive were you with those opportunities? So versus Colorado, 1.05 yards per route run. Versus Tarleton State, pretty good game, 2.20. Versus SMU, 0.91. I think on that SMU recap podcast, we said, I like that the offense is going through Darius Davis. Can we find Quentin Johnston?
Yeah.
Oklahoma, 1.32. We thought, okay, it was a blowout. They got everybody involved, whatever. Versus Kansas, 5.89 yards per route run. Versus Oklahoma State, 4.39 yards per route run. Grant, this stat is new to me, so I'm going to explain that just a little bit. That means that for every time Quentin Johnston lined up in a pass play and ran a route, he averaged 5.89 yards last week, 4.39 yards this week. For reference, Cooper Kupp in like a record-setting all-time season for the NFL last year had like 4.1 yards per route run. So again, obviously NFL, I'm not saying Quentin Johnston, Cooper Kupp, he's probably better than Cooper Kupp, but I am saying that TCU has found a way to get him very, very productive. Darius Davis, 5 targets or 7 targets, 5 receptions. He had what? 3, only 0.29, but had, you know, still, some more opportunities. I think they're still ironing out kind of how to get those two working together. But if Quentin's the leader, I'm more okay with Quentin the leader and saying, all right, let's get Darius involved in other ways rather than Darius Davis is kind of the vehicle for this offense.
Yeah, and this was not Darius's best game. He had the fumble and the punt return. He made a boneheaded decision to field a punt. I think within his own 10-yard line and got smoked. And then he also had a couple of entertaining 20-yard returns. I mean, Darius giveth, Darius taketh away. I'm fine letting him have a bad game.
I will. Yes. So he did one. If the ball is inside of the 10 on a punt, fair catch and get in someone's
hit
way.
Somebody.
That's all you got to do. That's all you got to do. I've known that's been burning my brain since Reggie G.D. Fish. Sorry to my dad who's listening to this. In the 2006 SEC championship game against Florida, fielded a ball on his own 8 and fumbled it and gave Florida the ball and the game was over. Just so dumb. Plant your feet at the 10, fair catch it, and just run into somebody.
Yeah.
So we need to have an explicit conversation about, hey, if you get the ball at the 7 and you run it 12 yards, that's still a 6-yard loss for the team relative to just fair catching it. TCU needs to be a lot more opportunistic with the fair catch on kickoffs and a lot more reluctant to bring it out of the end zone, because with this offense, we don't need, you know, starting field position doesn't matter.
Okay, but the flip side of it, if that's immaterial, then the difference between 19-yard line and 25-yard line is immaterial. And if you break a
I'm not saying the 6 yards is immaterial. I'm saying it is material. I'm saying what's immaterial is the positive variance for you to maybe get it out to the 30.
Oh, that's it. Okay. We don't have to have this conversation now, but just but I'm curious about that, because you're saying the difference between the 31-yard line and the 25-yard line is not as great as the difference between the 25-yard line and the 19-yard line.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, that's fine. We'll save that for another day.
Whoever's listening to this seriously and taking notes, can they just write down Parker and Grant pull up the expected points chart and talk about whether it's good or not?
I know I'm so far out of my depth here, but I'm just curious about that.
No, I mean legitimately, I don't mean that condescendingly. I'm not being a bitch. I'm saying let's look at the expected points chart and be like, is this a good idea or not? Yeah. That would be a fun off-season series.
It would. Can I say something nice about the offensive line, which is not a sentence I thought?
You can say something nice about 80% of the offensive line.
Good. Honest. I mean, it if not good, then serviceable. Max Duggan was not sacked. He was only hurried per PFF 6 times, so I kind of disagree with that. But they pass blocked Oklahoma State pretty well. And I did not see that kind of, what the, well, 80% of them did.
Well, if you're looking at like pass blocking grades, you're going to see a different story. But yes, 4 out of 5 guys, especially for what was going on the other side of the ball, did an amazing job here keeping pressures out of it. It is astonishing to me that TCU could not find a tackle this offseason.
I have a feeling that's got to be priority one of the transfer portal.
You can't let this keep happening. So the other thing to look at is like, you know, run block grades. Again, those are what they are, but those are actually way lower than the pass block grades here. And TCU's running backs were still just going. I mean, Oklahoma State could not tackle to save their lives. Just really, really, really bad there. So offensive line all around gets a good grade. All 5 guys played all 88 snaps, which I think is excellent and good for health and depth and wonderful. And so that's certainly better than the alternative. But yes, there is an obviously weak link. I think I used a month's worth of curse words on Saturday in about a 4-play sequence where I thought I was going to have to leave the room. I thought I was just going to have to stop watching the game.
It's the penalties, man. That's what kills me.
The penalties out of timeouts. A penalty out of timeout is like, if I was an offensive line coach, you would be doing up downs on the sideline for that. That just makes you sick.
100%. We should talk about Max real quick. We have to. Not his best game. But if Max Duggan's floor is 23 of 41 for 286 yards, 2 touchdowns, and no picks, and on a 9.6 average depth of target, adjusted completion percentage of 67.6. Cool. Because that's so much better than Max Duggan's floor of the last 3 years. Now, I don't know. I mean, Oklahoma State played some pretty good pass defense, and honestly, there weren't guys running open for the majority of the game until Riley and Dykes kind of had their wheels spinning and QJ got free. If that's the worst we'll see in a Max Duggan, hey, man, I'm totally fine with that. Parker's got a look on his face like he's about to rock my world with some sort of statistic.
Okay, and the last last touchdown drives. I mean, two for 3, and Kendre Miller runs for TD on the 47-yard one. On the 94-yard one, he was what, 4. He was 4 for 5 on the drive there. The touchdown, he was 1-1. The touchdown, they ran a bunch because his arm was hurt. Yeah. His shoulder was hurt. So, I mean, down the stretch, like the difference for me is that Max had a bad game in the first half. I'm going to literally repeat the monologue I just said. But, like, Max had a bad game in the first half. And what that looks like under the previous regime is, okay, we're just going to run it. And if we lose, that's okay. And there were halftime adjustments made. Somebody got to Max. Max was not as flustered about the substitution thing in the second half. I think in the first half, he was very upset about that. And Sonny Dykes was too. I can say, I think calling balls and strikes, Sonny Dykes got too emotional about that and got hung up on it. It was in his head. And I think at halftime, we still didn't have the explicit conversation about like, hey, Max, if you count to 3 and nothing's there, you got to go. There were too many coverage sacks. Not a lot of separation, but as they opened it up, they really said, what can we get Max to do for us that's going to work, and really improved down the stretch. I think that is just, that's an entirely new world, man. That's not something we've seen in a really long time.
And also, my bias is probably showing, but dude, he's running QB power and putting his light. You've seen the video. I think it's Ed Reed in the Miami locker room where it's Joaquin said dominate and we're not doing it. Don't ask me if I'm all right. Hell no. I'll put my heart in this shit, dog. That's Max Duggan every time he runs QB power.
Yeah, there is going to be blood.
It was successful. I mean, he damn near scored to end the game or end the game. I think. And anyway, it was.
Oh, dude! If he'd have had that, oh my gosh!
Oh my god! I would have lost.
It was still great. It was still a great play, regardless. I think that. I mean, if you look at that in that still frame on that play, that was almost a touchdown. Max gets hit and is going backwards and turns his body and still goes for it. That's just impressive. The big deal for me, Grant, is the no negative plays, the no turnovers, the no fumble, the no fumble snap. Saying we're gonna raise our floor, Grant. That's such a refreshing for a breath of fresh air compared to an offense that. Was, you know, a coordinator had literally on the record said, sometimes Boykin would just do stuff and we didn't know what. We'd throw up our hands and it was a touchdown. Very different to say, like, no, we're going to be surgical and we're going to alter this and get our guy going and really surround him. So I really appreciated that. I really think that was great. I mean, this has just been, as someone who has wanted Max to succeed from day one and realized that he was given the short end of the stick, on an emotional and spiritual side, I am very glad that he's got it. I do still think that the QB discourse is so dumb because people are like, oh, Max isn't it at the very beginning of the game. And you're like, guys, just watch a whole game and then we'll talk about it in light of the evidence from the rest of the season. He wasn't great. I want to say he's great because I'm affirming him. He wasn't great, but he was good enough. And in the past, TCU's quarterbacks have not been good enough.
Yes. It's so refreshing. Can we praise some defensive players?
Can we ever? I will say I have never gotten... I don't know that I've been on an emotional roller coaster with a defense than I have from the first two drives for the rest of the game. Because, man, it looked real bad from the linebacking core. D. Winters got cooked. I believe what I said in the group chat was... Old man, 96 years old, sitting on his porch looking man. Because he just got absolutely cooked on a run. And it was like, oh my gosh. And then it worked. They figured it out.
Joe Gillespie, you said it. He pants Caleb Dunn.
Casey Dunn. Yeah.
Yeah, Casey. Yes, excuse me. But it was amazing how much better that defense played in the second half. And really just how much they contained Spencer Sanders. It was... hold on. Tymon Mitchell had 4 pass rushes on 14 pass rush snaps at nose tackle.
Have you ever heard the phrase addition by subtraction?
Yeah, I have.
Our opinion, this podcast's opinion on the role of Sonny Meese in this defense has been well known and well stated. And it's a shame that it took the man getting physically injured, tearing his pec from his body, for TCU to realize, hey, we have better players on the roster.
Yeah.
And Mitchell is a dude. I like Dominic Williams. I think he's still pretty rough and he's young. Sure. That's great. He should be rough.
Yeah.
Tymon Mitchell has been a freaking dog the last couple of games.
Absolute dog. He was good against Kansas too. Josh Newton was unreal in pass coverage. It was targeted 8 times, only gave up 2 catches. Had 2 pass breakups as well. Bud Clark. Listen, real estate on Bud Clark Island has never been higher. I don't care that he actually got beat on his interception. Don't give me that look. He made the catch. House 3 bedrooms are going for $600,000. Make your offer now before prices skyrocket.
Man, just amazing. Just so good to see a guy back there thriving. And without Millard Bradford, there were some issues. I'm not gonna say a person's name. That's okay. We're not gonna do that. A couple players had some bad. Had some bad plays that really did not help in the back there. The other thing I want to point out, Abe Kamara is good Abe, bad Abe. It just depends on kind of what you're going to get every time. But I will tell you, he had a couple hits in the secondary that looked bone crushing. I don't know how a person can hit somebody so hard. But man, it was like a viper striking. He was just very close and just laid somebody out. And you're kind of like, okay, they got an 8-yard run. And so I understand, like, that was still a success, but you did hit him hard. You kind of deserve to walk over him like Iverson. That's fine.
Abe Kamara is the epitome of, hey, if you're going to make a mistake, make it going 100 miles an hour. He goes 100 miles an hour in every play.
Yeah, there is no half. There is no half ass in Abe Kamara. I'll tell you that.
A lot of whole ass.
There's a lot of whole ass. Yeah, so definitely some issues with depth there, I think, are problematic. Marcel Brooks with a pretty bad injury. I don't know that I'm breaking confidence by saying that I heard he was in a wheelchair on campus. Maybe it's just fun to ride around in a wheelchair if you don't have to walk, and so maybe it's not that bad. But
yeah, not making fun of people that have you ever like been wheeled out of a hospital?
I have.
Yeah, many. It's a great feeling. You feel like you feel kind of special.
No, yeah, but I mean, so hopefully he's okay. I will say, just our tracker there, Shad Banks, 5 snaps. Marcel Brooks, 5 snaps, but Marcel Brooks was injured. Shad Banks and Marcel Brooks together probably make a whole linebacker. I wonder if we could put them in a fusion reactor and get a 10-star recruit out of the two of them that can cover and play the run, cover the pass and play the run.
We're calling him Shad Brooks, to be fair. There's no way we're getting Marcel Banks. It's Shad Brooks.
Marcel Banks was actually the old white guy in front of you on the golf course on Saturday.
He can't drive, but he can putt like a mf'er. The linebacking crew, I'm so curious dumb. About this. I know, it's very dumb. I'm just looking at PFF grades, which of course are you know, they are what they are. Joy Hodge had a 76.9, Hodges had a 63.7, and Winters had a 63.8. It's not as bad as I thought it could have been, which is a sentence I don't want to diagram grammatically, but it they had some bad moments. I also think they stepped up in the second half, especially to kind of quell the run and stop Spencer Sanders.
Well, to put it in perspective, TCU has 47 missed tackles on the season, Grant.
Mm-hmm.
They've played 6 games now, and 30% of those missed tackles came in the Oakland State game.
Okay.
So yeah. That's not great. There's six games. So you would expect, hold on, I'm just going to do 6 divided by 100, 6%. So you'd only expect 6% of those tackles. I'm just kidding. 6 to 1/6 is not
the worst joke you've ever 6%. Made. It's barely a joke. I wish you could have seen the grin on his face as he was fake.
I can't even do bad math funny convincingly. But yeah, so 30% is not ideal there. But with some stuff in the background, like we're not going to, you know, we're not going to.
Yeah, I want to bury a kid. But
we praised him. So I'll say, like, Abe Kamara is involved in a lot of things, but he does miss a lot of tackles on the season. He's got 7 overall this season. And in this game, why does PFF just go blank sometimes?
I don't know.
Ability to improv. It just murders my improv ability.
I'm just going to say this too. Mark Perry led the team in tackles again, and it's not great when a safety leads your team in tackles, but that confirms my theory that Mark Perry in run support is really damn good.
That's fake news. That is 4-2-5 thinking. Spill and kill, baby. Mark Perry should make every tackle. Yes. So it's good that he let it. It's working, right? It's working.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's fit. No, thank you for that. That actually makes a lot of sense.
Yes. Honestly, the missed tackles were very spread out in this game. I believe 10, 11 players tied with 1 at second. And D. Winters had 3. D. Winters had 2 tackles and 3 missed tackles. Not his best game.
He had a bad game. He's still probably the best linebacker, I think, on the roster. He had a bad game.
Yeah.
So did Darius Davis. That doesn't mean Darius doesn't need to start next game.
They adjusted around him. Absolutely. Yes. So totally fine there. Totally fine. But worth pointing out, hey, there are some issues that make me a little bit worried about teams that don't have John Paul Richardson as their main deep threat at wide receiver.
Yeah, no, that's completely fair. Also, someone should cover Braden Johnson. Would be my suggestion.
It was almost poetic. It was almost poetic that, like, right after Quentin Johnston was wide open, that Braden Johnson was wide open on the next play. Yeah, just very, very dumb. Okay, I'm looking at all defenders. I'm just looking at who got targeted. Are there any matchups? I don't know. D. Winters, Josh Newton. TC was really, like, one-on-one. A lot of these guys were just, like, on the same guy overall, over and over. Josh Newton did kind of let everybody had the most targets, 8 targets, only 2 receptions. And the one that he gave up that was a touchdown, I mean, what can you do on that? The ball is there. You make a play. I mean, you just can't, you got to do something superhuman. I don't really fault him for that. So he had an 85.9 grade there. Pretty good. So some issues with the linebackers and with the backup safeties, but the starters are really good. And if TCU can leverage the offense where Mark Perry is more like the 3-4 as opposed to the 3-3-5, I think that's only a benefit.
Yeah, I will say too, one troubling area was covering kind of that halfback delay, not really even a screen, but almost kind of the middle screen with Dom Richardson for Oklahoma State, had 3 catches for 79 yards, and his average depth of target, oh, don't do this to me.
-1, -2
What was it? It was, let's see, Dom Richardson's ADOT was, drumroll, -2.7. So, and he had 3 different guys on him in that and burned all of them. Just something to look out for, TCU kind of using those running backs to cover, or excuse me, linebackers to cover running back leak.
Don't think that Mike Gundy did not take a perverse pleasure in exploiting the check down when Max Duggan did not hit a check down until the fourth quarter.
Yeah, no, it was very, very Gundy-esque. Okay, is there anything else about... Oh, I want to give one shout-out real quick. Griffin Kell. Nails.
Hey, yeah,
absolutely. 7 of his kicks, I think. Yeah.
Plenty of opportunities to be a... plenty of opportunities to be a college kicker, and he was very not college kicker.
Yeah, it was a very, very comforting to know that you know, when the chips are down, Griffin... none of them were particularly long, but still make them, and it was good.
Still got to make them.
Anything else, Parker? Because I want to talk a couple of big picture things before we get to the whip around and all.
Yes, I have. I have some like grandiose thoughts, but I'd love to hear yours kind of big picture.
We can start using the P word.
I think we have to.
I don't want
I think
to.
We have to. Okay.
We have to.
If TCU goes undefeated, being ranked 8th, They're in.
Yep.
Undefeated Power 5 champion, going to be in.
They're in. Yep.
Because you don't have an undefeated USC. You don't. So that eliminates one.
Yep. Big Ten's going to knock each other out.
Big Ten might knock each other out, but SEC is going to have one loss there. So a one loss SEC non-champion is not going to make it over a big, as much as they don't want that. Yeah. I don't think this is a playoff team.
There is
an absolute grind. So I want to separate out, we're talking about it, but my expectation is still 8-4, and I'm thrilled with anything else. From a program development side, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm getting greedy here, because before the season, if you would have said, hey, TCU is going to go 8-4, I would have shook your hand and gone to the Alamo Bowl or whatever. But since we're here, and since we're 6-0, your expectations start to shift. Whether you want them to or not, your expectations start to shift. So, Parker, I agree with you. This is not a playoff team. But we're going to be objective and take the 30,000-foot view of not from a TCU fan and say, okay, this team is undefeated. They're number 8 in the country. They have a grueling schedule ahead of them, even though they've already played 3 ranked teams in a row and beaten them. Let's start treating this team like a playoff team. Whether we want to in our hearts or not, we kind of have to when you're evaluating TCU, as of now. And that could change Saturday.
In the conversation. Yes, that could change Saturday. And so I think that's totally fair. I am pulling up because I just wanted to say I did my little 8-4 thing again. Where did it go? But 8-4 basically looks like 2-4 the rest of the season, which at this point in the season would be a disappointment. I think we would be talking about. So Kansas State at West Virginia, Texas Tech at Texas, at Baylor, Iowa State. No buys. It's happening, dude. This is absolutely it. I think hopefully that'll change in the future with how Sonny Dykes wants to schedule. But TCU should be favored in 5 of 6 games down the stretch. Good Lord, Grant. TCU is 6-0.
Texas being the one that's not.
And should be favored in 5 of 6 games going down the stretch.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think losing all 3 of Kansas State, Baylor, Texas would be really tough. I think not only favored, but should beat West Virginia, Texas Tech, and Iowa State.
Should beat Baylor, but we know what's going to happen.
No, and listen. We know. We saw it last year when TCU beat Baylor.
That's how it works. I understand the rules. Banks. I agree to these terms. Shad Banks intercepts you and keeps you out of the playoff. Next year, you keep him out of the playoff with a stupid win, too. I understand the rules.
I don't like them, but I understand them. But at this point moving forward, we have to start treating this team like a playoff contender.
I would still have them ranked outside of the top 10.
I don't know, man. I mean, if you look at head-to-heads, but you can't look at, I mean, you have to take resumes into consideration, because this is not a perfect game and we can't just go by the numbers. You have to take into account resume and say, okay, look, yeah, if TCU played Alabama tomorrow, I think Alabama would win. But TCU has three wins over teams ranked in the top 25 and they're undefeated. And Alabama has one loss. And it's coming off a loss. So TCU, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's, you can't just go by pure, you know, EPA or numbers or whatever. You have to take into account resume. Again, I'm saying all of this in terms, because college football is divorced of reality. I'm saying this divorced of reality. I'm saying this in terms of who is going to make the playoff, not as who is the playoff team or who should be in the consideration for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to frame the season in terms of playoff or not, because I'm enjoying the ride and I think we're learning a lot about what, yeah. Okay, here it is. I'll be the adult. I've got this. This is good. I was figuring out how I was going to land this grant and this whole time, and I was looking at my opponent-adjusted EPA, and I'm not going to be a freaking nerd. Here's what I'm going to say how I'm framing this season. This is what the ideal Sonny Dykes team at TCU looks like at its peak, yeah. Right? Here are my concerns. Can they build this roster again? I don't know. Can they do better on offensive line? Probably, you would hope. But 82% returning production, clear third best talent in the roster, best talented roster in the conference. A good coach should be doing what Sonny Dykes is doing with this team, with this roster, against this schedule, in this conference. That's not a slight to him. That's not saying he's not a good coach. I'm saying this is proof of concept for, if Sonny Dykes can build the roster, we know what this can look like. Can you build the roster? Offseason questions. Something we're going to have to think about. So that's what I'm trying to keep in mind. I'm not trying to rain on the parade. Let's take a New Year's Six. Let's go to the freaking playoff, man. That would be incredible. I would root for it. Let's do it. That's great. Let's remember, can he build the roster again? That's what I'm kind of holding in all of this season.
I'm willing to withhold that discussion until the offseason, but that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm a very live-in-the-moment person, Parker. Oh, I also I wanted to say one thing, too, if you don't mind. And I didn't write this out, though I should have. I had a moment right as TCU was storming the field, was right when Tennessee-Alabama was ending. And, of course, you and I both listen to a lot of podcasts, and, you know, we follow a lot of the same people on Twitter. And, of course, the national discussion was about Tennessee-Alabama. Guys, as it should be, I had a moment where I was like, damn, I wish more people were paying attention to TCU-Oklahoma State, because that was a hell of a game. You know, dadgummit, TCU's putting something together, and people are just paying attention to Tennessee-Alabama. That's fine. Don't be mad about that if you are. And maybe I'm arguing with a straw man. I don't know. Tennessee-Alabama was also a hell of a game. Tennessee hasn't beaten Alabama in 15 years, and they finally did. Don't say, oh, we're the underdog, and put a chip on your shoulder or whatever, but that's how things go. And I had that moment and had to talk myself out of it. So if you had that moment, don't feel bad. Just say, listen, this is how the college football world works. Accept it. Move on. Let's beat Kansas State on Saturday.
If you let the suits tell you what's best in college football, Grant, you will end up watching Tennessee and Tennessee and Wisconsin on a Tuesday night at 9:30 p.m. in Yankee Stadium. Right? We don't want that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just take it for what it's worth. Parker, let's do a little bit of a national whip around.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's then we have some, I don't want to forget, I'm just going to say this out loud. We have some fan stuff just to say, yes, give me your reactions. Sure. Oh, somebody asked, I want to do this. Let's do this real quick in the national whip round.
Okay.
Six games. Let's go. Which ones, let's say right now, how are you feeling, win or loss, the rest of the six? We've done the first six, remember? Let's do the last six, win or loss, okay? Kansas State.
Win.
I'm going to go loss. I think here's our first stumble. I might change my idea on Wednesday. Who knows? West Virginia.
Win.
Win. Texas Tech.
Win.
Win. So you're at 9-0. I am at 8-1. Okay. At Texas.
I really hate myself for saying this, but I think loss.
I think that's a likely loss as well. Road team, they have more time to get healthy. So that has me at 8-2, you at 9-1. At Baylor.
Win.
I don't think we lose both of those. Win. And then Iowa State.
Win.
Win. So I'm projecting 4-2. You're projecting 5-1 down the stretch. Either way would be just a hell of a season for TCU. Doing that for the followers, Grant. Don't take those too seriously, but I think that's important to look at.
I'm I'm so close Grant's to just furious. Going full.
Grant's Kool-Aid. Furious that I put him on the spot here and made him.
No,
made him
because I'm so close to going full Kool-Aid, and I don't have the willpower to stop myself from doing things that bring me joy. And talking myself into TCU going 12-0 the rest of the year brings me so much joy. And I'm just
Grant,
I'm
we did it before the 2019 season, man. We could do it, all right?
Remember when Alex Delton started? Okay.
Oh my God.
Okay, let's go around the Big 12 real quick.
Do you know how Alex Delton showed his bare butt and failure to launch?
If you understand that joke, please call this number.
We'll send a hotline. Oh my God. Okay, take me to the national whip round, please.
West Virginia Baylor ended in the same score. We should do Big 12 first. 43-40.
I knew it stunk. I knew it. I tweeted out before. I didn't take it as a play. I knew it. Baylor -3 makes too much sense. Stinks to high heaven. Blake Shapen did get hurt, but nice to see a little life out of West Virginia, man. When that offense is going, when Tony Mathis is breaking up the middle, Bryce Ford Wheaton's getting open downfield, and JT Daniels is just mailing it right to him, I want to believe so badly. I want to.
I don't, but Kansas 42.
Let me tell you, there's a couple G5 defensive backs who are going to have great seasons at West Virginia next year. They're going to get to play the entire damn season at West Virginia next year.
Oklahoma 52, Kansas 42. Farewell, top 25 Kansas. We hardly knew ya, but still a good team that pushed Oklahoma. Dylan Gabriel back obviously really changes the Sooners. Kind of not a get-right game, but I'm sure it was fun for Oklahoma to score 52 after scoring precisely zero the game before.
Hot take. Didn't hate the anthracite uniforms.
Yeah, I don't either.
And if the players like them, who cares? But I didn't hate them.
No. Texas 24, Iowa State 21. As you said, Parker, Iowa State will lose every game, but they'll lose it by one score.
I don't even... The whole targeting fumble thing at the end is a red herring.
Yeah.
Xavier Hutchinson, one of the best receivers in the Big 12. One of the best receivers in the country. An NFL guy had a wide open touchdown, Grant, and left his feet. He jumped.
Stay on your feet.
Why did he jump? He should have kept running. He could have stopped, done a backflip, and then walked into the end zone. No one was around. He was wide open. That would have been, I don't even know if it would have been game because you give Quinn Ewers the ball with, 2 minutes left. But still, I think a lot of frustration on that game is because they had it in their hands multiple times. I don't think that Iowa State has the personnel to run the offense that they want. I think they're trying to modernize an offense, and Jalen Noel is not enough of a running back to play the role he's playing, and Jirel Brock is not enough of a receiver to play the role they want him to play, so they're swinging between those two guys, and man, it's just ugly. There were some plays where it was like, I think of Kendre Miller probably scores on this play here. It was pretty rough. Noah had a couple big plays too, but it was pretty rough.
Good to see the Panthers' job is open. Speaking of the Panthers' job, Michigan 41, Penn State 17. We can go ahead and say goodbye to Penn State. Not a serious contender. Michigan's good, man. Michigan's good.
Michigan's good. Penn State, I think, is not that much worse. Although I will say, Michigan didn't finish drives early in that game. And Penn State took a lead briefly because of some nonsense, which really masked, this is a beatdown. But this is like Ohio State, Michigan State last year. I don't think Penn State's as bad as Michigan State was, where it's like, hey, man, if they're just going to keep running this one thing and you can't stop it and you didn't prep for it in game, you're screwed. There's nothing you can do here. That was pretty rough.
We should, I guess, spend maybe a whole minute on this. Tennessee 52, Alabama 49. What a damn game. I mean, that's not to get sentimental. That's freaking college football at its finest. That was a ton of fun.
Hendon Hooker's Alabama amazing. Missed a kick. That's the Alabama funniest thing in the world.
Kick. Why they can't figure that shit out? Jalen Hyatt just running free behind the Alabama defense. Bryce Young might still be the best player in the country, and it doesn't matter. Just an incredible game.
Absolute loser behavior from Tennessee, though, throwing up a GoFundMe link because they have to re-put the things in, especially after on film, on camera, the AD is sitting there like, we don't care how much it costs, we'll do it every year. And then they throw that, poverty behavior, man. Don't act poor. Come on.
Poverty.
I don't care if you are poor, don't act poor. Do that stuff behind the scenes. I don't have to see that.
Undefeated Syracuse, 24. North Carolina State, 9.
Sorry, were you just hard taking me out of some casual classism? Did you not want
to
hear
my disdain? Yeah, I was. Yeah, I was to talk about North Carolina State losing, not having a quarterback, and Syracuse being undefeated.
North Carolina State, life comes at you fast, man. Boy, we said it. I think we might have been the originators of North Carolina State is officially overhyped, but they're good. Yes. But without Leary, too, that's just that's rough, man. There's not much they can do. Syracuse, not good, just not playing people. There's just no one on the other side of the ball.
Syracuse is something will happen on every snap with Syracuse.
Syracuse is most likely to go to a bowl game and get the shit beaten out.
Oh, just absolutely demolished. Kentucky 27, Mississippi State 17. I think we called this wrong. We wrote on Mississippi State. Yeah, I don't know what the hell that was. Utah 43, USC 42. I watched the first half of this game before I fell asleep, and USC's offense was humming, and then Utah just... Remember when Cam Rising was at Texas?
No.
Cameron Rising spent his first year at Texas.
Oh my gosh.
And then transferred to Utah. And as a matter of fact, wasn't there another quarterback that transferred to Utah from Texas? And I think Rising was 1 year behind him and sat behind him at Utah. Anyway.
Swoops. Where did he go?
Swoops, but it was someone else. I'm going to do this on the fly.
Welcome to another episode of Bad History by Greg.
Bad History with the Purple Theory Podcast. It was, it was Charlie Brewer from Baylor.
I thought you were thinking about Charlie Brewer.
Yeah, I was. Well, then Jake Bentley was there. It was a bunch of transfer quarterbacks. And the last thing I want to note, North Carolina 38, Duke 35, suck it. That's it.
How down bad is North Carolina football? Well, they're excited about beating Duke. I think it's funny. Alex Kirshner, who basically this podcast is just me reading Alex's tweets, evidently the last couple of weeks, tweeted like, it's got to be an amazing feeling that North Carolina knows that they will never do anything to Duke worse than they did to Coach K when they beat him.
Ever.
Like, no one will hurt a program in the same magnitude or way that North Carolina did against Duke. I give you 30 seconds. Go.
It's the happiest I've ever been. There's not a single thing Duke can do to North Carolina unless Hubie Davis stays for 40 years as the basketball coach, breaks Mike Krzyzewski's win record, wins 5 national championships, and his last game announces a publicized tour for everyone to censor him off for the entire season. And in his last game at his home stadium, gets beat. And in the Final Four, the first time the teams ever meet in the Final Four, gets beat again. It's the funniest thing that's ever happened. No, nothing will ever top it. That's it.
Gotta say, I'm holding an NC State under 7.5 card, so I need a real bad stretch versus Pitt, Virginia, Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, and NC State. I'm not feeling great about it.
We don't need to delve into ACC football, but Carolina only has one loss. This is their season moving forward. It's
Pitt,
Virginia, Wake Forest, Georgia Tech,
that's
and NC 8-0, State.
9-0, 10-0, 10-1. I mean... 11-1. What? No, they're 6-1.
Yeah, they only have one loss. They lost to Notre Dame. That's it.
They could go 10-2 so easily.
Really easy.
I wonder.
And have the worst defense in the world.
Oh my gosh, Gene Chizik.
None of it makes sense.
Was he just on the side of the road and Mac Brown found him and took him home? I don't understand it. I'm not even okay. Let me go outside of the memes. I just don't understand why. Like,
no, me neither.
I don't get it.
Dude, just go live on a lake somewhere. And stop ruining the defense. Parker, this has been the Purple Theory Podcast.
Oh, no, wait, hold on. I asked for reactions.
Oh, fans,
we have a read
fans.
Some, yes.
Well, this has been our part of the Purple Theory Podcast.
This has been our part of
the Purple Theory Podcast. We hear from the
fans. Grant hates the fans. Okay, I'm not reading anything by Scott Wildcat or the Kansas State Bros. You guys are the enemy this week. Mason Treen says Jared Anderson could never.
True.
Mason and I were texting today, Grant, about when he was going to come on after his like dumbass TCU win of the season, because he's done that the last couple of years, and we decided not to waste it. We felt like there were more dumbass wins,
so
we're going to hold on to
wins
it.
Ahead.
Matt Kohlfeldt says, pretty sure I mentioned frog-induced cardiac arrhythmia in the offseason, and I'd just like to say I was right. Matt, please see your doctor. Symptoms last longer than 4 hours. JD Saylor's master of activities, never a doubt. Clint Foster says, we're back, fam. Aaron Sanchez, I've never seen Dykes lose in the Carter. Grant, many people are saying that Sonny Dykes has never lost as the TCU head coach.
Actually, he's never lost in the Carter. He didn't lose there. Never lost at SMU either. Yeah, exactly.
Very impressive. It was nice. Tango, Nintango Switch says, it was nice methodically inching back in the game like the superior team that fell behind early. Yes.
Yes.
Just the sideline sun disparity impacted Oklahoma State late. We had sideline gate. There was a thermometer on the sideline. Alfheim Thomas says TCU would not have won without Hypnotoad. I don't know. I didn't see Hypnotoad because I was not in the stadium. So if someone could explain what they did, I don't know. But great. I'm glad I'm glad Hypnotoad was there. Cam Saran, friend of the podcast, says go Horned Frogs. Boba Frog says too legit to quit. And I believe that's David Robinson. In that GIF. Judson, TCU has already met my expectations for a year one coach and system amidst a master cultural change. So anything from here on out is just icing on top of the cake. I like that attitude. And then he says, that said, TCU wins the Natty easily. Funky Talk Frog mentions call an ambulance, but not for me. And Texas history teacher, I just texted this tweet to Grant. We are going to call this episode The Gang Wins in Double Overtime. I love it. That is great. Thank you. We'll do that. So many of you guys responded here. I won't read all of these, but appreciate you all and have read them. Just won't read them out loud because there's like 10 more. But very excited to be exciting about these games again. And love that. I mean, definitely it's way more fun for Grant and I to talk about TCU when they're not just abysmal.
So much more fun.
I think the anniversary is going to pass before we get to the Wednesday show, Grant. So I'll bring it up right now. Do you know what this week is the anniversary of in TCU football?
Of Matt Jennings' column.
The Matt Jennings column. I have a tweet scheduled for Tuesday during the press conference. Gonna be amazing. Just a year ago. Actually, here's what happened. Here's what I'll say. A friend of mine from TCU doesn't really follow football very much.
Oh, no. Oh, okay, wait. Sorry.
Oh, are you explaining the Matt Jennings thing? I thought that was common knowledge.
Explain your thing.
We'll explain. My thing was my friend doesn't really follow TCU football. He's just kind of aware of it. And when they make national news, he's like, oh, wow, this is fun. So he texted me and he said, what's different this year? And I said, well, turns out when your coach isn't on Twitter 12 hours a day, it's a lot easier to win football games. And this week, perhaps, is the beginning of the end, the beginning of the beginning of the end, I guess, or the ending of the beginning of the end, if you will. Last year, Gary Patterson read a Medium post, so not even like, it wasn't even written for, Matt does not write professionally about TCU. It is literally like a fan, a very talented journalist, but a TCU fan wrote a blog post online and about it's time for the Gary Patterson era to end. And Gary read quotes, talked about it in the... In the press conference, this Medium post I love Matt. I don't mean to say like a nobody.
No.
A nobody. It's not like Paul Feinbaum was like, Gary's got to get out of here. It was like a dude with 1,000 Twitter followers.
Like, that's done a lot in journalism. He is like, he's out of the game and good for him. And he was like, hey, man, here's my thoughts. Gary's like, hey, F you specifically.
Yeah, like that's unacceptable for that to happen. Just an incredible moment. Very fun. Maybe if TCU makes the Big 12 championship game, we can just get Matt on the podcast and have him just tell us about life.
We should just do like a live, we should do a live reading. I think it'll be fun. Of the column and Gary's comment. We're at the end of this podcast, but the breath of fresh air, and I won't call any TCU staffers out specifically, although people who know who I'm talking about. The freedom in which TCU staffers are tweeting and very clearly taking delight in, let's say, the Sonny Dykes era, is just unbelievable. And you can tell it's just everyone's so happy over there.
Jeremiah Zanotti is taking no prisoners right now, and it might come back to bite us later. We still really need to beat Texas Tech, but man, I love that attitude. This is very fun. Okay, Grant, we're approaching that hour mark. We shouldn't hit the hour mark on the recap show. Give me your closing thoughts, and let's get out of here.
No, my closing thoughts are I was about to say something that I shouldn't have, so it's probably a good time to listen to this podcast.
I got the nosedive out. You got me to stop talking about poor people. I got you to not say whatever. We both helped each other. This is wonderful. This has been the Purple Theory Podcast. Oklahoma State recap. TCU undefeated, top 10 ranked, faces a top 25 opponent, a top 20 opponent, a top 17 opponent in Kansas State this weekend. We will do our preview on Wednesday. Until then, be well. Go Frogs.